saying how much they want a strong woman. What they really want is a cheerleader.
I'd like someone who's physically very frail and won't stop talking.
I just want what everybody wants. I just seem to have a harder time getting it.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Maximum Film. It's episode 301, 301. Well, look, we've only just begun with the Spider-Verse, that is. It's your host, Ify Whitey, waiting in the booth with me, all my friends. So let me introduce you to them. First up, we have to say Alonzo couldn't be here tonight, but we will hear from him later. Andrea Clark, you know, queen of the Midwest Super Festival program producer, is in her seat. So why don't you tell me what's good?
Aw, kitten. It's good to see you, even if Alonzo's not here. I'm very excited for our guest who is returning and to discuss the motion picture today. But what is good with me is it's an app. A sentence you don't normally hear Ms. Andrea Diane Clark saying, but my friend Kiva Liliquist just introduced my friends and I to this. It's an app called Be My Eyes. And you sign up for it, and it puts you, you can either sign up for it as a volunteer, which I did, or if you are someone who is either blind or visually impaired, you can join, and basically you'll maybe occasionally get a phone call of someone who needs you to be their eyes. So the first call that I got came through the app, and it's only a camera on their side, and then your microphone, in case, because that seems obvious, but once it was happening, I was like, a call from a stranger, a video call from a stranger, all my nightmares. But it was a gentleman who was just had his camera pointing at a sweater and asked me what color it was, what it looked like, what the lining was, and if I could read the label to him. And it was a very nice, oh, isn't humanity positive and can be helpful at times? And also technology can play a role in that. So I don't know how strong the need is. I think they have millions of volunteers. But if that has any interest to you, you can join me in being people's eyes occasionally. Mm. That was my little foray into the future.
That is a very good thing. And I've heard of it before. So you once again proven to be, you know,
12 steps behind.
No. I would say proven to be so loving and caring that only the queen of the Midwest could be. Truly.
I really was just like, oh, an avenue for me to just tell someone what I see? Done. I'm always want to tell people what I'm seeing.
Yeah. It's like, I'm in here. I'm letting you know what my eyes are seeing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, look, today we have a wonderful guest. It is writer, comedian, co-host of the podcast Medium Popcorn, Brandon Collins. What's good?
Hey, what's up, y'all? What's good is this movie that we're going to talk about, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, because Coyle Ray has a song called Self-Love on the soundtrack that I've been listening to on top of Daniel Pemberton. I think that's the gentleman that did the score and everything. Just the whole soundtrack has been putting me in a vibe. It made me remember like seeing the movie in the theater, and we're going to talk about it, but Self-Love specifically just brings back the emotion I felt during the, you know, the whole Gwen Stacy stuff. And it's been a long time since a song just immediately had an emotional response for me. And so just feeling that again, I've just been playing that song over and over, to much to the chagrin of my wife, who's like, you really like this Metro Boomin song, don't you? This is the fifth time now. That's been, because we're packing up and we're preparing to move back east. And so it's like, you know, just been a vibe. It's been a good vibe, very bittersweet vibe. And that's kind of how I feel in that song. So that's what's good.
That's also my musical MO, is find a song I love, play it till I hate it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're still in the love phase.
Keep it running.
Oh, yeah.
Ify, what's good with you?
Oh, man, what's good with me is, you know, I you know, we've talked a lot about Kickstarters and other, and the things being kickstarted. Well, you know, I jumped into the foray as well, doing a live actual play. Let me run Drea through this. An actual play is essentially when you play D&D live and people watch you play these characters.
Okay.
And so me and my friend Annika Seeley went and started our own kind of a channel where we're going to have just a bunch of my funny friends on, people you typically wouldn't see playing, you know, tabletop games, and bring them to the table with folks who you might see playing tabletop games. And we kickstarted our first campaign, and it was funded in a day, but we're, you know, we're keeping it going, getting stretch goals going. And if that sounds like something you'd be interested in, check it out. It's going to be dope. We're going to have a lot of fun art, but yeah, it's Get on the Horse. The Duster campaign is called Old Rush, but Get on the Horse, which is, of course, just a ploy to use that acronym Goth, and oh my God. Our logo is a goth horse. So, you know, check it out if you want. If any of that didn't put you to sleep,
no,
check out the Kickstarter.
I'm also appreciative that you took my confused face, and instead of turning to condescension, you just became informative. I applaud. Oh, yeah. I appreciate. And fun fact, did I once program a section of Let's Play videos? I did. Ooh. So I sort of know something with similar titling. We're basically the same person, Iffy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've already said that.
Oh, yeah, you know,
So I'm glad we're driving it home.
I'm excited for your goth horse, hon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did I do that right?
Yeah. No, that was perfect.
Okay, good.
I feel, yeah.
You feel accepted.
Yeah, I feel accepted with open arms.
Open, confused arms.
Yeah. With arms wide open, often confused.
Well, speaking of arms, let's talk about 8 of them, because we're hopping across the Spider-Verse. Hey. Then we'll pitch some ideas for characters who deserve a Spider-Verse of their own. But first, it's time for Itadick, our movie news segment, where we go through the week's movie news and answer the question if it's important and if we care. Andrea is kicking things off.
All right, so the Directors Guild of America has had only one strike in 87 years, and even that was just minutes long. They sought out and finalized a tentative deal with the studios last weekend. Directors were able to secure some gains in the contract, such as pay rises over the next 3 years, increased cuts of global streaming residuals, and a one-hour workday reduction for ADs, assistant directors, to name a few. We are recording at an awkward time for strike news. By the time this releases, SAG-AFTRA, the Actors Guild, may potentially have ratified a strike. Both SAG and the WGA have issued statements amounting to, "Good for you, DGA, but this does not change our demands." Is this important? Do you care?
I mean, as a writer, I definitely
yeah,
care.
We need
to get what we need, what we're asking for. You know, it's the directors and writers are aligned on a few things, but like for writers, this is like a big, it's not a game changer or anything like that, but it is very reminiscent of how the last strike panned out. For
yeah,
the only plus side is that the actors seem to be very much in like unison with the writers, so hopefully that works out in our favor, but. It's a bit murky out here.
Yeah. You know, just that. Yeah, I think you nailed it. Yeah, you know, speaking with Adam Conover on The Picket, he pretty much told me this much would happen. So his prophecy so far is running smoothly, you know. But, you know, we will congratulate them and keep pushing and not let these studios divide and conquer us. So, yeah, directors, congrats on that. Enjoy it. We will be joining you shortly.
Yeah, I think that not many people were surprised. There's obviously very minimal historical recognition from the Directors Guild when it comes to recognizing strikes. They just are not a striking body. It's also... It is a strange window of time in which they took this deal, because the Writers Guild, or sorry, the SAG still has a few days. Like they, you know, like there's still enough running space. It's kind of curious. And there are things that would apply. Like in 2008, when this happened, it was basically the quick beginning of the end to the Writers Guild, and as you've both mentioned, that seems much more unlikely this time around. They did get some wording that would then potentially be phrased into both SAG and WGA about AI, acknowledging that it's not a person and cannot replace duties performed by members. However, the WGA had certainly asked it to go further, and I imagine SAG would as well. And then, you know, a lot of the things, the big stuff too, is on streaming and on streaming residuals, and that the successes of a show in streaming, that a director or anyone in the DGA, because it's not just directors, I mean, puppeteers are in the DGA, for God's sake. But sorry, they deserve to be. I didn't mean it that. I just mean it's a wider body than it sounds like. Good for you, puppeteers. Get whatever you need. But that of what everyone's looking for, this is, sure, it's something. I'm sure it's fine. But yes, I'm glad WGA seems to be standing strong. And also, most importantly, it seems like, from my side, really listening and valuing its members and what they're wanting and asking, which is kind of the point of a union. So I hope you all get everything you want and deserve sooner than later. How's that?
Ditto.
Yes, indeed. Well, keeping it rolling, Studio Ghibli will release Miyazaki's last film with no trailer or promos. Animation pioneer Hayao Miyazaki announced his retirement after 2013's The Wind Rises, but he came back for one last hurrah, a movie called How Do You Live, that will be released in Japan this July. Studio Ghibli is trying something different to promote this release. Highly anticipated in Japan, nothing. Tired of trailers that reveal the entire plot of the film and leave nothing to the imagination? Well, Ghibli has opted to promote How Do You Live with just a single cryptic poster. Is this important? Do you care?
I love this. You guys know I don't watch trailers if I can help it. Like, yeah. I do not enter the theater until I hear Ms. Nicole Kidman talking about how things feel different in a place like this. Like, so I love this. Of course, you need the name recognition and brand trust of Hayao Miyazaki and Studio Ghibli to pull this kind of thing off. Sadly, I feel like a Drea Clark production may not generate the same excitement at the box office with just a small cryptic poster, but what a way to take advantage of a brand. And also, they spent decades building up something that audiences can trust in, that you're like, oh, this will be a delight for the mind and senses. I'm going to get something imaginative and emotional and poignant and creative. And that to me is such a baller move. It's such a not American move. Like, I don't know if anyone could ever... You couldn't do that at a studio here. I'll tell you that.
It's interesting you say that, because I'm interested to see how this campaign does work out, just because it is very gutsy to just like post one poster and like that's the advertising. Because I do think, given like the reception of Spider-Verse, they're at a point where they could probably like just release like a 10-second clip letting you know when the movie's coming out, and it'll probably be great, right? Because to your point, like all the trailers lately have really been spoilery.
Oh, yeah.
From what I've learned, though, that's usually means that the movie only has like good stuff in the third act, so they put everything in the trailer to make sure you try to go. But yeah, this is a very interesting campaign. I'm all about minimalistic campaigns that tell you what it is very quickly, like, and you decide if you're in or out without having to watch five trailers and tell you what's going on. So yeah, I'm curious to see how this pans out, because I think it could be successful in the U.S., but I don't know if studios have the guts.
Yeah.
But it's also that combination of, if you're like, oh, we're doing, you know, if you have your studio of recognition like Ghibli, or you have your filmmaker like Miyazaki, sure, we have those. But I think of it, I'm like, Steven Soderbergh has released just direct to HBO, as I call it, like several fantastic films last couple of years, of which I think myself and one other person has seen, and that person's Alonso or Brandon. Oh. Three of us saw them. Like, you know what I mean? I don't know if me saying this is bemoaning, or maybe this would make me an absolute asshole of a studio head as well. And I'm just like disregarding the clamor or intelligence of audiences. But I don't know if I trust in our populace to get psyched by something like this. Like, if Avatar 2 had had zero ads or promos or whatever else, like, that's name, that's all of the stuff they could have done that on. They're not gonna try that. Like, I mean, that movie obviously cost probably a few more ducats than, you know, How Do You Live, but...
How do you think Scream 6 would have done if they just, the trailer was just a bodega scene? If, like, it's just that
quick
30 seconds, and it's just, like, the movie's coming out in, like, few weeks, that's it.
I love a I have to say I love a clip in lieu of a trailer for all that we've said.
Yeah.
The amount of films that I can eat, it's why I don't watch them. I can so easily piece together every single moment. And in this article, the studio head was saying that they're like, oh, there's a large U.S. film coming out this summer. And I was like, what is it, Barbie? No, it's not. But it's some big-ass movie, and it already has three trailers out. And he's like, if you watch the three trailers, you know the whole movie. Like, there's not a scene untouched, probably. And that's a bummer. Oh, Marissa thinks it's probably The Flash. She's probably right.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing, right? Is it's trying to sell you on the movie, but sometimes you're watching the movie and you're like, damn, I wish this was a surprise. I mean, I've said this, I think I've told this story a million times on this pod, but I will always lean on that story Jordan Peele told about the trailer for Get Out, where they wanted to put the scene where she finds the key in the trailer.
Yep.
And he was like, that is the biggest twist in the movie. Why would you do that? But it's just that instinct to be like, and it's like,
yep.
Like it's somewhere in between what we're talking about, where we can trust not giving away the whole thing and do it. Like, for example, Barbarian was a movie that not much was really known about the whole story if you only kind of went off the snippets. And what makes it fun is the twist as when you find out it isn't the story you think it is.
Right.
So,
but that was successful off of word of mouth, right? Like, because that trailer is so ambiguous as to what it's really about. Mm-hmm. And you just see this black woman going into a dark room. And like, I remember the theater people being like, nope. But then I started hearing after opening weekend, my friends were like, you got to see this movie. You're going to love it. And that's why I went out and I started saying it. Similar to Get Out. Because I remember the trailer for Get Out, I was kind of like, Jordan Peele, this is going to be weird. Maybe I'll check it out. But then like we happened to see it opening weekend and we were like, this is fantastic. So,
yeah.
But like what comes to mind to Drea's point is, you know, Fast 10. Wasn't the first trailer like 5 minutes? And I remember being like, what is this about? Like, are they not confident in their product now that they just have to show us every money shot pretty much?
Fast 10, the difference with that franchise, they can show you everything. It's still never going to make sense. And once you see it in the movie, you're going to be like, oh, I kind of remember that, but I don't. There's so much other stuff. There's too much going in there to like, oh, is there a setup that's ludicrous with the car? And I meant not Luda, but ludicrous. But I mean, they both work. So it stays. It stays. All right. Speaking of Fast X, yes! Okay, Marissa gave me that as a segue, because our next Itadic item is about Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who is in fact coming back to the Fast franchise, though potentially without Vin Diesel. Sometimes news should come with a spoiler alert. After the ending of Fast X revealed a peek at an otherwise absent Luke Hobbs, a story broke last week that Dwayne Johnson will return to the world of Fast and Furious, albeit in an interim Hobbs film that sets up Fast X Part 2. Duh. It is unclear if Dominic Toretto will be a part of the story. Marissa has a clip.
I think, you know, when you, despite us having our differences, me and Vin, you know, we've been like brothers for years. And despite having our differences, when you lead with the idea of, number one, resolve, but then also you just think about the future and you think about plans that are much bigger than ourselves. And those bigger plans are the bigger build-outs. Those bigger plans are the North Star, as I always like to say. The North Star is always my guiding light in whatever endeavor or opportunity that I am in, that I'm passionate about. I always keep a North Star in my clarity and in my focus. And in this case, the North Star is the franchise that we love, the North Star are characters that we love, and the North Star are fans that we love. So when you add all that up, it's really not a hard decision to make. It's a yes. So yes.
That is some amazing rhetoric to get around talking about the paycheck he's going to get.
I was going to say buddy talks.
Yeah. Holy is this buddy. Important? Do you care? Do we care about The Rock's L'Etoile du Nord?
You know, I feel like We care because we're part of the Fast family. All of us here, you know, and we're excited to have him there. But it definitely feels like he's not going to be in the movie with him. It seems like he said all the things that he needed to say to.
I feel like there's such a great catch-all with referring to Vin Diesel as his brother, because then it can just take the legs out of any argument or beef that they've had online. Like, they said some ugly, I was like, oh, you two hate each other. Like, there was such arrogant hatred, and to like try and deflate it later and be like, oh, you know, like, we're family, we're brothers, so we can say these things, we can do those. I'm like, you two are killing me.
That sounded like someone who knows that they need a comeback from Black Adam. That sounds like someone that needs a surefire hit. Because until I see The Rock in a Vin Diesel hostage video, like the other co-stars in the Fast franchise on his Instagram, I don't believe that they've reconciled. I think it's just, I wouldn't be surprised if this Hobbs movie is completely separate and maybe there's a Dominic cameo at the end. Then that bridges to the in-game movie that Vin Diesel's trying to do with the last Fast and Furious movie.
To me, the olive branch you give to The Rock is the olive branch of, oh, you get to do a film where you're the star. Like, great. Iffy.
So
I couldn't tell if you were like, I want to talk or just a moment, man.
There's some breaking news.
Yes.
As much as I'd hate to stop the talk of the family, I have some breaking news that SAG-AFTRA members have authorized the strike with nearly 98% vote for work stoppage.
Yeah. There we go.
So this is the to your left moment.
Nice.
with the strike. So I just wanted to call that out. It just popped up.
Thank you for
that. Now we showed up.
Yeah. I'm thrilled for the update.
Awesome.
I feel like Hobbs would also be excited.
Yes.
Yeah. No, yeah. I do think, though, that this one will be like, and I loved Hobbs and Shaw as a standalone. Like, that was a solid film, a solid pairing. And I think The Rock is a great leading man. It will be very, very funny because they're going to be so smug and excited with themselves when he and Vin Diesel do ever share the actual screen again. They're going to be like, oh, I mean, did we do it or what? They're going to be so proud of themselves for just two grown men showing up to work. So proud of themselves.
Yes. Well, on that note, we're going to take a break. But when we come back, we're going across the Spider-Verse. Hey, you out there catching cakes before your dad's big announcement for making it to being captain, but you're too busy being Spider-Man or whatever superhero stuff you do? Well, guess what? You can skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. Every plate is now owned by HelloFresh, and with a wider array of meal plans to choose from, there's something for everyone. I love switching between the brands, and now our listeners can enjoy both brands at a discount with me.
All right, so I've said it before. I'm sure I'll say it again. I'm not someone who turns to cooking as a release or as fun. And therefore, I feel like I'm even more grateful to HelloFresh because they just make it easy and time efficient. These are all producer loves of mine. And then also ultimately delicious, which has nothing to do with producing and everything to do with my joy and happiness on this planet. The best thing, they have a ton of recipes, and then you can even factor in things you are picky about. You can put in if you're pescatarian or vegetarian, and it will craft out what you need. It will make cooking very fast and easy. And if you're like me, a single meal you make will equal two meals if you're cooking just by yourself. So you can get like a box of three, and it'll three meals. It'll last you for a whole week. A whole week of dinners, I say. What a treat.
Hmm. So if you want a piece of that treat, go to HelloFresh.com/MaxFilm16 and use code MaxFilm16 for 16 free meals plus free shipping. That's HelloFresh.com/MaxFilm16 and code MaxFilm16 for 16 free meals plus free shipping. Let's get back to the show. Welcome Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Wadiway. In the studio with me are
Drea Clark
and Brandon Collins.
Considering its multifaceted style, it's appropriate that today's movie was helmed by not one, not two, but three directors: Joaquin Dos Santos, Kemp Powers, and Justin K. Thompson. It's the follow-up to 2018's Into the Spider-Verse and the precursor to next year's Beyond the Spider-Verse. Some may have may not known that. But Drea, would you mind giving us a brief synopsis of Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse?
I'd say yes, but there's no such thing as a brief synopsis to this movie. But in the broadest of strokes, to use an animation term, we get a very quick beginning of the film following Gwen Stacy, whom we met in the last... the first one in this franchise, right? And which we loved. And we've already touched on this multiverse, and we start by popping in on Gwen Stacy and hers, showing her own isolation, sadness, and parental issues. And then we pop over and we back to Brooklyn, and we see our guy Miles Morales, who has hit a bit of a teenage growth spurt and is in that phase where it's harder and harder to connect with his parents, however loving and supportive they are. He has been friendly neighborhood Spider-Maning all over Brooklyn and handling all sorts of baddies, and he encounters one he assumes is just another run-of-the-mill bad guy of the week called Spot, who has a very Rorschach vibe but then turns into like portal bits of his body. It's very inventive and exciting, and he ends up being a much bigger deal than Miles first thinks. And then with that, we pop back into the multiverse through a variety of mechanisms, and throughout the course of this film, honestly encounter hundreds of different spider people, and it is fabulous. So they're all figuring them out, and it fully ends on a cliffhanger, and you should know that. If you haven't seen it yet, know that. Some of us didn't. All right. Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Yes. Oh, man. Look, we're going to just jump headfirst into this.
As if off first a building?
Yes. With Hello Danger playing. What's so interesting, I thought about this when I was watching this series. Sony has always been an interesting place with Marvel stuff. Because for the longest, it was the idea was that they just couldn't make a quote-unquote good Spider-Man movie. And then Sony Animation came in and said, oh, really? Watch this. And now it's the biggest thing, and it is still somehow connecting itself to the, you know, general Marvel storyline in ways, but also still allowing itself to be separate. Do you think that that has made it better for you, knowing that you can kind of focus just on these movies and you don't have to watch all the other ones?
Well, it's interesting, just by virtue of it being animated, it all automatically is sort of separate in my brain. I'm not worried about a cavalcade of cameos outside of this world. They do reference it at one point, like there's a joke about Doctor Strange, and there's a joke, you know, like they mention the kind of separate but equal division of the characters. But yeah, I do like the idea of a world that doesn't hinge on, especially we are people who are deep into the MCU, and that idea of, oh, each story having to be its own thing, but then a fulcrum or a piece of a larger puzzle, and this is just its own puzzle, which for something, even at this enormous scale, is still more manageable in a way.
And even then, they still, if you've been watching all these movies from the different iterations, whether it's the Sony, Marvel properties, or the MCU stuff, there are some really fun cameos and Easter eggs that are like, that brought a smile to my face. And I was like, oh, that's, I love how that pulled that off. Because it doesn't dwell on it too long. It's just like quick, and you're like, oh, okay. Like, they know what they're doing. Like, it just makes you feel like you're in good hands all the, like, this entire movie.
You're in good hands. Yeah. You could absolutely go into this so blind. I don't think you need to see the first one, but you should because it's such a wonderful movie. The beauty and artistry of this movie, like the storytelling is on a whole other level, but that it's actually matched and the animation is utilized in a way that it is as constantly groundbreaking. I mean, it's doing different animation styles throughout, and none of them feel forced. Everything feels so organic and fluid, and like it's either animation shifting in a moment. Like there's a moment where Gwen Stacy is sort of reunited with her father, and the entire color palette changes. Sketching of what the room, and it's, and you're watching it, and it's like teaching you a visual language. It doesn't matter how well versed you feel, not pardon the pun of the verse, but it doesn't matter if you already feel comfortable with those things. This movie is setting it up to be extraordinarily accessible, but also challenging in exciting ways that you could rewatch this so many times and take in so many different things, like how it's just, it's just firing in all cylinders. It's phenomenal.
I've been telling people that haven't seen it yet, but who know how much of a cinephile I am, and like I'm a big Jurassic Park fan, right? I remember seeing that movie as a kid, and I was like, this movie is the closest I've ever felt to being 7 years old again and looking at the movie screen and saying, oh my god, like I didn't know movies could be like this.
Yeah.
Incredible.
I went into this movie just curious if it would somehow be able to live up to the hype of its predecessor, because it was, people were saying it was just the best Marvel movie bar none, best Spider-Man movie bar none. And so going into this, I was like, man, will they be able to do it? And yes, they can. I mean, not only
we did it, Joe.
Not only are they able to really just kind of take what they did in the first one and elevate it, which is like Drea was saying with the animation storytelling, like with Spider-Punk, and how since he's this punk rock character, he's never truly static. He's always changing, and he looks very like against the grain of like what the animation is on a purposefully. And but on top of that, introducing these characters like Hobby Brown, who is Spider-Punk, who friend of the pod, Cody Ziegler, just wrote on the run of Spider-Punk. It's out. You can get it. And he has the playlist to go with it. But also just like Spider-Man India. And just like there were more ethnically diverse spider people on the screen than white Spider-Man. You know, like like to do that, to if you were to explain that, people would lose their minds. But to see it on the screen, it happens so naturally and casually. It's almost amazing, because if you've been paying attention to the nerd zeitgeist right now, the big complaint is they're turning all of our characters black. For example, in the new Magic the Gathering Lord of the Rings set, Aragorn is black in it.
I like that you went with that and not Little Mermaid. Yeah. You're like, Little Mermaid, but for certainly I'm going to bring up Magic
definitely,
the Gathering.
Definitely the thing that people are talking about are the Magic the Gathering Lord of the Rings mashup where Aragorn is black. That's just what's on my... But yeah, like the Little Mermaid, and you have this version of it that is undeniable. And you know, I'm gonna jump right into the cameo
wait, hold the cameo in your armpit, because I do want you to come back to it, but lest we let that go, I'll say that the idea of broadening what a Spider-Man can be and having all of these spider people from different backgrounds, this is a perfect example of how all that does is open doors for storytelling and for visuals.
Oh yeah.
And that all of the spider people that we saw that had these different backgrounds, they weren't just like, oh, we drew an Indian Spider-Man and we drew a black Spider-Man. No, Spider-Punk is like British anarchist 1970s. Like it's a very, this isn't true for Iffy, but if it's been a minute since you had a crush on an animated character, wait till you get your eyeballs on Hobie Brown. Cause I was like fanning myself, but like you have that and it affects in his background impacts how he spiders. And same with like the Indian Spider-Man that you get, he gets to make jokes about chai tea and naan bread. And like even the spider pose he goes into is reminiscent of like Hindu statues. Like there's just all of these great textural.
I'm gonna jump in to go even further than that. Not you've noticed that it was like in Hindu statues, but also across the Spider-Verse went to to learn one of the oldest known martial arts. It's I'm gonna try it. Kalaripayattu, which originates from the Indian state of Kerala over 2,000 years ago, and they went and they had a team kind of mimic the movements of that martial arts style for Spider-Man India. Like that's how
they did the work. Depth,
yeah,
like even Brooklyn. Like you know, my wife's a New York native, and she's like, you know, Myrtle. It all looks authentically Brooklyn.
Oh, I've been on that rooftop. Yes, I was.
Yeah,
I was someone's plus one, but I did get to go to that rooftop. Yes, Iffy, I believe you had an interesting point about a cameo.
Yes,
that I cut you off, gosh. But now I'm on the edge of my seat to hear what it was.
We are talking about the cameo of Donald Glover. And the reason this is important is because I asked online and it seems that we're old and some of the people don't understand the significance of Donald Glover being in this movie. And it's not just picking up the pieces that were left in the newer Spider-Man movies where he is kind of hinted at being the Prowler.
Yep.
But the inception of Miles Morales comes from Donald Glover mentioning that he'd like to play Spider-Man and getting a bunch of racist hate online. So then Brian Michael Bendis is inspired by that to create a black Spider-Man who is Miles Morales. So to have a scene where Donald Glover is looking at Miles Morales, it is a level to see someone looking at something he created because he said something as innocuous as I would like to play Spider-Man and everyone said it couldn't happen. And Brian Michael Bendis said, okay, well, let's make it.
And do you mind if I talk about another
voice
cameo? Like it's kind of spoilery though. So is it okay?
Yeah.
We're in the verse.
Okay, good. Because the ending, to your point about someone who wanted to play Spider-Man, Jarrell Jerome has been very vocal as an Afro-Latino actor. I would love to play Miles Morales if I ever had the opportunity. And he does. It's just not the Miles Morales we know.
Oh, that's it. Is he? Okay.
That's Earth, him. That's Earth 42. I didn't know that was Jarrell Jerome.
I love Jarrell Jerome. He's crazy talented.
That's why, like, you know, my wife is very much like, oh, when he says Miles Morales, like, he says it with a different
inflection. Yes. Yeah.
And that's from Jarrell Jerome because he grew up in the Bronx. And,
it's so good because, he's definitely hitting all of those accents when it's the other universe's Miles Morales. And it is like an interesting, you know, and it's such an interesting layer, right? Because you have this version of Miles Morales who has, you know, his black dad and Puerto Rican mom who he grew up with. And then in the universe where it's just his Puerto Rican mom and he's like more on it with his Spanish, like that's such a little minor detail that just was so good. I like the revelations that happen because there's a whole high level philosophical question being asked in this. And through this, let's say proverbial wrench kind of makes you question, you know, fate. It is all about fate and what it is. And I think even on a deeper level, whether pain is necessary to grow, if you should force it to happen.
Ooh, that's good.
I think
I love that because that also is that all of the spider people are wrestling with in terms of they've all accepted this kind of ethos in the mission that as an entity that they've done.
You need to have trauma to be Spider-Man.
And then what does that mean? But so this movie is wrestling with a couple of enormously weighty concepts. One of them is that. And then the other, the idea of the power of parenthood throughout was insane to me. Like don't have kids. I'm not having kids. And honestly, the combination of what all this movie was giving me and the kid that was screaming in the theater and its parents could not get it to be quiet. And I felt so badly for them because it was giving me that airplane thing when, you know, they're like so embarrassed, but they just want to enjoy the movie. Anyway, it was a lot. And I was like, oh my God, like this movie, the pressure of being a parent, but the also very real, like, with the power of great responsibility, or what is it with the
great power comes great responsibility.
And that's parenthood, right? Because what we're getting from all of these different spider people and is both on the individual journeys of identity, of accepting themselves, accepting their role as spider people, accepting their role in the world. But more than once, you also see this element, which very much reflects the world we're currently living in, of these younger kind of teenage, I keep saying spider people, which is not a cool way to say it, but like we have Gwen, we have Miles, who want to be telling their parents about their true selves, and they don't know if their parents are going to accept and love them if they reveal that. And that as is something that transcends into our actual world right now, and so many kids, so many young adults, adults of all ages, like people who want to be truthful about who they are and reflect that into their families and don't know, oh, ready for another pun, if there's going to be a safety net of tolerance and love for them. And that's a huge thing.
That was a powerful moment for me when the mom tells that speech to Miles. In any other, with any other writing, that probably would have been an incredibly corny moment. But that's such a beautiful moment where the mom's like, I'm worried about how they're going to treat you, that they're not going to protect you the way that we protect you. And that's especially for a young black man like Miles Morales to have that in a film that's like, you know, just in a different medium. You don't see that. And the fact that it's like it resonates with so many people, like that message. And I also love in that speech that I think that it told us the last image of this entire series. When she asked, she asked what she wants him to do. So I think that was also beautiful, like that little plant.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. When she did that, so, and this can take us into the other thing, as Iffy said, this ended with a huge cliffhanger, which also Fast X said. I knew Fast X was going to, I did not know this one. This movie, the pacing and storytelling is bonkers. It's bonkers anyway, because it's creating its own world. But you, and we watch so many films, like I know where I'm at any film based on what's happening with the story. Oh, I'm like a third in. I'm halfway. I know how much. This movie, the further along it went, I was like, I got no clue. Where are we? Especially because I didn't know it was only, it was not going to tie everything up. I was like, what is this movie doing? Has it ever seen a movie before? This is wild. Where am I going? I'm on a rocket. What is happening? Like, and it is still, it's, I mean, it's making sense every step of the way, but it's really exciting when things are not as formulaic as like the, this is where we start. This is your hero's journey. This is the whatever. This is a film that's introducing big, broad concepts. It has these amazing, huge action pieces and then several meaningful, emotionally in-depth conversation moments, animated moment, like, oh yeah, it's giving along, but it was, the pacing was wild.
I mean, the first 10 minutes alone, I'm like, the amount of mileage they're getting on the page right now is insane. Like as much storytelling as they're just popping in, the first 30 minutes is its own movie. It's incredible.
And it's Gwen Stacy's movie.
Yeah.
I was like, this is great. I didn't, as you know, didn't see the trailer. Oh, I didn't know this was going to be Gwen Stacy's movie. How interesting. Oh, it's not. Yeah. Oh, hey there. Oh, okay. Sure. Ooh. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, no, it's solid. I guess it's time for us to vote. And, you know, the way we vote for things on this pod is screen it being the highest, stream it being the next, and skip it being self-explanatory. And I'm on the edge of my seat to see what everyone's going to say.
I'll lead off. It's very clearly a screen it for me. If you can screen it without any upset children, recommend. But if they are there, I hope that if they are yours, you are still able to enjoy the movie. And I hope the kids do too. I think this was, I will absolutely see this again. And I might even see it again on a big screen because I can't stress enough. It's that kind of thing when you're like, I know this art form so well. I know animated films well. And yet this is playing with and doing things that I've not seen before. Like everything is so thoughtful, but energized. Not like, oh, it's overly thought out, but oh no, someone put attention and care and energy and passion into it. And it's meaningful and fun. Yeah. Screen it. Brandon, yes, what about indeed. You?
I 100% concur. I mean, this is like, I mean, if you folks, if you didn't understand earlier when I said that this brought me back to my childhood, this is one of the best movies I've ever seen in my life. This is
nice.
This is absolutely immediately in the top 10. This, you must screen it. Screen it several times so we continue to get movies like this. it just works on so many levels. And the amount of people that are impacted by this, this is huge. I can't sing this movie's praises enough. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I, you know, very clearly a screen it for me as well. Just a completely, just an amazing, like, all around experience. It feels like a comic book movie should. It feels like you're watching a comic book, and it comes together with the crossovers, and it's exploded in a way in my brain where I'm just curious of all these other versions of the Spider-Verse. Like, I would like there to be a Spider-Verse comic book series where it's almost like a What If, but instead it is very real universes of Spider-People and like a short run of what their world is like. So yeah, huge screen it for me.
I would love to see what T-Rex Spider-Man's life is like for a day.
Oh yeah.
Just what is that going? What's going on there?
All right, y'all. Well, before we head to break, let's hear what Alonzo has to say about Across the Spider-Verse.
Hey, everybody, it's Alonzo. I'm sorry I couldn't be there this week. Actually, as this episode drops, I will be in Kansas City for Christmas Con. Where else would I be? So if you're around and you happen to be attending at the Overland Park Convention Center, please come by the Deck the Hallmark booth and say hi. Anyway, Spider-Man, Across the Spider-Verse, dug it, loved it. These movies are doing something really exciting, I think, both in a narrative and visual sense. You know, I love the mix of textures and styles. I love the mix of multiverse Spider-Man, especially having just seen The Flash, which I think does something similar, but not nearly as well. The Flash really is just a pat on the back for how attentive you have been to comics over the years, whereas I think Spider-Verse, you don't have to have read a single comic book to see how great it is and to be charmed by the wit and the thrilling excitement. Can't wait to see how this thing resolves in the next movie, but I'll be there for it.
Thanks, Alonzo. As always, you're wonderful. But yeah, we'll be right back after we hear from another show from Maximum Fun.
Greatest Trek is the podcast for all your modern Star Trek needs. It's funny, informative, and now it's also timely.
That's because every Friday, right after the release of a new episode of Strange New Worlds, Picard, Lower Decks, Discovery, or Prodigy, we bring you a review of that episode.
There's some great new Star Trek coming up, and we're going to cover all of it.
You'll like our show because we're both former video producers, so we bring a lot of insight into the production and filmmaking aspects to these episodes.
And we also have a very refined sense of humor, so we make lots of delightful fart jokes along the way.
So come see why Greatest Trek is one of the most popular television recap podcasts on all of the internet.
Subscribe to Greatest Trek at MaximumFun.org or in the podcast app you're using right now.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Wadi Way. In the studio with me are
Brandon Collins,
Drea Clark.
Across the Spider-Verse posits a world in which over 100 different forms of a beloved character, Spider-Man, collide. If you could choose any character from the history that you'd like to see come face-to-face with 100 versions of themselves from across the multiverse, who would it be and what would it be like? So I'm going to kick it off because I'm going to take it, you know, and it's sad that Alonzo isn't here to mention yet again. He hasn't seen this movie, but I'm ready for the dude verse. I'm ready to see the black dude. I'm ready to see the Indian dude, the Mexican dudes, all the dudes from all the holding a white Russian.
For the Big Lebowski?
Yeah. Just going in, just staring at each other because you know that they would just be so blown away by each other.
Yeah,
and just like not afraid, just so interested, and would probably sit down and bowl.
Obviously, you're not a golfer. I really want to see all of those dudes talking about how that rug really brought the room together.
Oh yeah,
yeah. No, and it is interesting because, like, with Spider-Man, if you're looking like, oh, is it the superpowers that tie them, and then also sort of points from their lives, like they all have something with like a parent or they whatever, or a parental figure. With the dude, is it, you know, they all have something to do with like being blackmailed with a toe? Like what are the formative points
yeah
of the dude? It's, yeah, do they all have a Walter? That's the thing. Do you get to keep the auxiliary character? Like, if you're bouncing around, do you get to hear Walter bemoaning Donnie for being a child who wanders into the middle of a movie? Like, is that happening in all of the different multiverses of the dudes? Mm. Are they all wearing... Iffy, I'm going to dream about this. I just know it.
Oh, yeah. No, they all have different robes of different variety, you know, just a representative of their culture. Good. You know, the Nigerian dude has the Nigerian print on the robe.
Yes. The robes. I love it so much. That's their uniform. The robes.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Make it happen. I can't wait. Okay, I do have one. And when I tell you it's a little bit of a departure from the dude, it will not surprise you. But the character I would like to see 100 versions of and see how different cultures would impact them, along with that, like different points of time in history, because it is a character that was very much shaped by where she was from. So seeing that sort of unleashed in different versions would be very exciting for me. And that, of course, I'm sure you guys are waiting for me to say Elizabeth Bennet from Pride and Prejudice, because that is, in fact, who I would like to see. I think that Lizzie Bennet also could really teeter and become a villain pretty easily. And so in a multiverse, like, that's what you kind of want from a really exciting character, right? Like, maybe one of them could go real wrong. And so that's what I like for her. But again, the Elizabeth Bennet that we know from her time and ending up with Darcy and dealing with all of the Wickhams of the world, that right there is the product of, growing up in Regency England. And you put that broad, what is she in Mumbai in the year 3000? Awesome. Is she armed? What can she do? What can't she do? She's Elizabeth Bennet. Like, she's extraordinarily witty. She knows how to play a room. She is pretty, but not as pretty as her sister Jane. I mean, it's really just like sky's the limit. I can tell you guys are pumped by this. Both Brandon are like, good. I was about to say Elizabeth Bennet, and so...
Yeah, I was definitely about to. I just need to, like, you know, really try and download who her character is to really see the different versions, but I'm sure it's great.
You know
I'm
what? Sure I have a few feature films and definitely more than one miniseries we can walk through in detail to bring you up to speed on old Lizzie Bennet. Happy to do it.
All right, hell yeah. Brandon. You always got my back.
I do.
Yeah, I thought about this. A character I would love to see different iterations of from different cultures and ethnicities, and just see how they survive this cold, cold world would be Charlie Brown. I feel like having all of them in a room, it's like, I would just love to see the kind of bad luck that happens, that descends upon that space.
Oh my God.
But they all have each other to lead on.
Are all of the Charlie Browns a bummer? Are all of them little baby bummers?
Well, that's the thing is, I've been hoping that they would find solace in one another. You know, like, that's what I have a hope, but at the same time, they might be all so miserable that they can't.
Yeah, like, what is your, just genuine article Charlie Brown sense, is that going to be limited by the absence of Snoopies? Or is there a Snoopy for every Charlie Brown? Or are the Charlie Browns without a Snoopy? You know,
exactly. I think there's some Charlie Browns that are without Snoopy, and I think those Charlie Browns are probably happier. I think because Snoopy takes so much of the coolness away from everything that Charlie Brown tries to do. Snoopy's always there, and he's the cool kid and everything like that. I think a Charlie Brown with maybe like a turtle instead of Snoopy would be a lot happier.
Yeah, and you think in that universe, then Charlie Brown actually gets to wear the Ray-Bans and not the dog.
Yes.
Got it. Yeah, I like that.
And in that universe, he actually gets a Valentine. Because I don't know if you've all ever seen Be My Valentine, Charlie Brown, where he does not get any Valentines, but he brought a briefcase to school thinking he was going to get all the Valentines. One of the most heartbreaking pieces of art I've ever seen.
I choose you. That's Simpsons. Uh-huh. Okay, good. Yeah. Good. Love it.
Yeah. We nailed it. We nailed it. And, you know, Facebook, y'all are already probably way ahead of us, but go ahead and let us know your favorite one. So five times a year I check Facebook, I can check it out and laugh. But now it's time for staff picks. It could be any movie at all. So who wants to start?
I have a movie. Mm. It is coming out this weekend when this episode drops. It is a film that premiered at South by Southwest this year called The Angry Black Girl and Her Monster. It is written and directed by Bomani J. Story. And it is about, it's set in present day and stars this teenage genius young woman. And she has, you know, her family's going through it. Their community is sort of plagued by drug abuse and police brutality, and it is modeled after the story of Frankenstein. And in this version, she is the Dr. Frankenstein when she tries and then resurrects her brother. And when he comes back, he is maybe more of a monster than she intended. So it has a really interesting. It's more gothic horror than like fright horror, bloody horror, scary horror. It's, you know, again, it's modeled after Frankenstein and it has that energy to it, but it's great in terms of what it's taking on for metaphor and just taking on directly. And I love the girl who plays, Vicaria, Laya De Leon Hayes. Is fantastic. And it's coming out. IFC is releasing it, theaters and digitally. So check it out. The Angry Black Girl and Her Monster.
Ooh. Okay, Brandon, you got any picks?
Yes, I do. This film also debuted at South by Southwest. Flaming Hot. It's coming out on Hulu. It was directed by Eva Longoria. It's the story of Richard Montanez, who created the Flaming Hot Cheetos. I know there's some dispute about the story, but the film itself is incredibly charming. Jesse Garcia does a fantastic job as the lead.
He's Richard, incredible.
He's so good. It's a great, like, feel good, like, you know, pick yourself up, like, despite all the roadblocks that have come into your life. It's incredibly inspiring. And it's just also, like, it's a lot of fun. There's some sequences that are very silly and cute. And just, it's just an enjoyable film. And, it's just a different story. I didn't know the story behind Flamin' Hot Cheetos. So, that was even more interesting. And yeah, it's got a fantastic cast, Dennis Haysbert, Matt Walsh, Tony Shalhoub. It's fantastic. And it's not too long too. A little under 2 hours, I believe.
Ooh, we like that as a selling point. Mm-hmm. Big fans. Yes.
Yeah, and keep it nice and crisp. We like a crisp, short movie. But yeah, and me, I'm going to close it. I'm in my spider mood, so I'm going to go ahead and give you a Spider-Man. And I'm going to say the first one that we did with Tobey Maguire back in 2002, Kirsten Dunst, William Dafoe. You know, if you were young and you missed it, you'll see where all the memes came from. Because William Dafoe was Dafoeing it up in a good way. It was solid. It'll show you. The way
he defoes like he's never defoed before.
Yeah. I, you know, and it's so funny because the movie I thought I was going to, pick, because I started it, but I didn't finish it. So I'm not going to have Stolen Valor, was Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down. The movie I started watching because I was thinking it was a different kind of movie. But you know, we'll report back with a full report on a future episode. I'm making Alonso proud accidentally.
It ends well. It sticks to the landing. Can't wait till you see it.
All right. Well, look, thanks to Brandon Collins for coming back again. Where can people find you and what are you up to? Because I know you got a live Juneteenth show coming right up.
Yes. Thank you so much, as always, for having me. I really appreciate it. This is a lot of fun. Folks can follow me at American Collins, AmericanCollins.com for show dates. I do have my Drunk Black History show coming up on Sunday, June 18th at the Bell House in Brooklyn. If you're not in the New York area, though, we will be live streaming it. It's a Juneteenth brunch show. It's going to be at 2 p.m., so it's early enough for you to have some mimosas, learn some black history, and then go home, take a nap, and then continue your day. And it's a lot of fun. We learn a lot of cool things about historical black figures that have not gotten their due in mainstream media. And if you like my, opinions on movies, check out my movie podcast, Medium Popcorn, on all podcast applications.
Nice. Ooh, thanks, Brandon.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes. And then I'm going to ride the promo train real quick and say, you know, so the lineup subject to change, but we talk about vidiots a lot here, but also on Juneteenth, I will be having the Iffy's Juneteenth Mini Fest where we're going to be watching The Watermelon Woman, and we're going to have a conversation with Brittany Nichols, who is an amazing writer and activist who you've wrote on Abbott, has a great short called Suicide Kale. Dope. Hope, which, you know, I'm trying to pull some strings. That was what I was talking to Dre about. I'm trying to see if we can get Rick down. We hit his reps up. We'll see what happens. But then we're closing it out with It's a Party with Lamar Woods, you know, my friend and creator of that movie. And then we're going to have a live Prim's Hood Cinema, which if you haven't seen it on YouTube, you should. It's wild. So check that out on Juneteenth at Vidiot's. It's going to be a good time. And if you're in New York, well, why don't you go to that brunch for me? Because if you support it, then we can get Brandon to do a LA one, and then I'll be there.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. I got an end game here. but yes, thank you, Drea, for another wonderful show. It's always great to have you here.
Anytime, baby doll.
How about same time next week?
Done.
All right. Cool. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at @maximum_film. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/maximumfilm, or send us an email at maximumfilm@maximumfun.org. Our producer is the wonderful Marissa Flack, Spark Super Film filmmaker, all of that. Why don't you Google her? Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. You can Google her too. She got some cool stuff. But this is a production of Maximum Fun. Bye-bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.